This morning we're going to be reading from Mark 4, 1 through 9. Again he began to teach beside the sea, and a very large crowd gathered about him, so that he got into a boat and sat in it on the sea, and the whole crowd was beside the sea on the land. And he was teaching them many things in parables, and in his teaching he said to them, "Listen, behold, a sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seed fell along the path, and the birds came and devoured it. Other seed fell on rocky ground, where it did not have much soil, and immediately it sprang up, since it had no depth of soil. And when the sun rose, it was scorched, and since it had no root, it withered away. Other seed fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no grain. And the other seeds fell into good soil and produced grain, growing up and increasing and yielding 30-fold and 60-fold and 100-fold. And he said, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." You may be seated.
Today we are very blessed to have one of our missionaries speak, and that's Keith Gustafson, and he will be doing the sermon today, so please give him a hand and welcome him.
Well, very first off, I just want to say thank you. Probably some of you know, but maybe not all of you know, that your church, this church here, has been supporting us for the 34 years that Florence and I have been working in Congo. So that's a very special gift that you've given to us, and it's something that we have done together in the work of Jesus around the world. So we're grateful to you. I grew up in Minnesota, a little bit further south than International Falls. I grew up and was born in Duluth, and I grew up a little bit on the range in Bowabic, and then back in Duluth again. And Florence grew up in Alaska. But even though she grew up there and probably had colder weather than here, she likes warmer weather in Congo better than the cold weather here. So we're grateful. I've been a pastor in Congo, not a pastor of a local church like you sort of think of here, but more involved with training of pastors and some evangelism projects, working with an evangelism team in Congo. When we talk about the church in Congo, I want you to realize that this is a large group of people. This is like 1,600 local churches. This is in membership, you know, official membership, about 245,000. But the church says that if you'd ask people, "What's your church?" close to 2 million people would point at a covenant church in Congo and say, that's my church. Or the church there would say, "Those are our people. Those are people that we work with, we witness to, we're a part of God's kingdom here." So that's the group of people that we work with in Congo. And that group has grown to be that size over the last 80 years. So that is really something amazing. And we're just thankful to have been a part of that. And we thank you again, because it's the friendship, the partnership, the prayer, and your financial support that makes this work that we do together possible. So, what were you doing 34 years ago? 1984. Where did you live? What color was your hair? Were you even born yet? No. What work did you do? What filled your days back in 1984? Back then, we were living in Seattle, and I was 32. My hair was brown. I had a beard then, and it was red. I worked with part-time at Shoreline Covenant Church and part-time in heating and air conditioning in Seattle. But that year, we were making a big change. We were starting with Covenant World Mission, now Covenant Serve Globally, and we were going to be moving, actually right at this time of the year, we would have just have arrived in Brussels, Belgium, to start studying French. And after that 1 year in Belgium, we moved to Congo, and for the last 33 years, That is where our life and our work has been. And now, like you said, I'm getting ready to retire in February. But when we started, we didn't know that we would spend a lifetime there. I mean, we didn't really have a clue. It became a big part of our life, and we're grateful for that. But at that time, who knew what our lives would be like? So I want to talk to you today about food and following and sharing. Okay, everyone in Congo has a farm. A small farm in Congo would be like half a football field. So if someone says, I have a small farm, that's what you can picture. And if someone says they have a big farm, it's probably 2 football fields in size, or bigger than that. But that's the normal big farm size. And all the work there is done by hand. So the clearing of the land, the planting, the loosening of the soil, the weeding, the harvesting, the cleaning, the drying, the putting food away, preparing food, selling food, that's all labor-intensive kind of work. And people grow things like corn and manioc or cassava, peanuts, sugar cane, beans, squash, sweet potatoes, plantains, okra, and other food. A lot of food is grown there and eaten there. And everyone knows how to farm. But just like here, some people get better results than others. You know, not every farm produces the same way. And I mean, we know the reasons here. You know, it's when you plant, if you predict the rain and the sun well enough, or how well your soil is prepared, or the quality of the seed, whether you're a good farmer or not. I mean, that's all a part of how good your crop is. And everyone, so even if they have another job, even like they're a teacher or a pastor or a doctor or nurse, government official, everyone needs to farm because people don't have enough money to just go out and buy food like we're used to doing here. So you have to farm. And so because that's a part of people's lives, that's one place where mission work, where missionaries have made connections with people in Congo. So a man named Paul Noren, he might have been visited here at one time, but he's loved farming all his life. He grew up in Congo. And for over 35 years, so longer than I've been in Congo, he's been working with agriculture and fish farming and projects that have to do with people's livelihood. And then Martha Klein, who's a physician assistant, she's been in Congo for 5 years now. So she's worked like with maternity projects and nutrition, but she's also working with agriculture because there's a tree that grows there called a moringa tree that help. It's like sort of like a dietary supplement for kids who are not eating well, because that's protein and vitamins. So those are ways that you look to connect with people in Congo. And that's a lot, the church does a lot of that kind of thing too. So last year, I was at a pastor's conference, pastors and spouses conference, and about 1,500 people came. So this happens every other year. It's a pretty big deal. And I was asked to preach 3 times. That's sort of unusual. I don't get to preach that often in Congo. But that time I had 3 times. And the first passage that they asked me to preach on was from 2 Corinthians 3. You maybe have heard, it's when Paul's sort of frustrated with people not being mature enough or have grown up enough to eat solid spiritual food. I mean, that's the image he uses, the eating good food. And somehow people in Corinth weren't ready for that. So as I got ready for that, when I read scripture, I think about myself. And I think, man, there are plenty of times in my life when I have not been as mature as I would like to be as grown up, to be as growing in faith as I would like to be. So I thought, how do we talk about that in this meeting of pastors? It came to me, I asked all the women who were mothers, who were over 50 years old, to stand up. I mean, that's not a polite thing to do here in the United States, but it works in Congo just fine. And a lot of women stood up. And I said to them, because they were 50 or over, I said, even though your kids are grown, you're not breastfeeding them anymore, you're not bottle feeding them anymore, When do you stop being their mom? And you know the answer to that. I mean, it's even in Congo, it's the same kind of answer. You never stop. For us who follow Jesus, for us who help people to grow and to know and to follow, when is our work done? When do we stop doing that work? It doesn't end, does it? We are gardeners in God's garden. We're cultivating food for each part of life of faith, God's people. Sometimes there's a good harvest, sometimes not, but we keep on clearing the land, and we keep on loosening the soil, we keep on planting, and we keep on weeding and harvesting. In the last year and a half in Congo, in the Covenant churches there, quite a few elders, people that I know, have either gotten sick or died. I mean, that just happens in our churches here and there. And a lot of these are people I know, people I've worked with, people who are my age or some younger, some older. They're people who, when we went to Congo, they helped me learn Lingala and work in the church, understand culture, understand faith in Congo. And Pastor Elenga Liwawa was one of those pastors who died last year. He was 55 years old. He had cancer and there was no treatment available. I don't even know if he was here, if he had been here, if he would have lived through that cancer. It was just too extensive. And I preached at one of his memorial services that happened. He had taught pastors at a Bible Institute, Bible's like a seminary, and that's when I first met him. So I met him really when he came to an annual meeting of the Covenant Church in Congo. He had bicycled 150 miles on dirt roads with a single-speed bike to come and just attend that conference. And when he was there, he was elected to be vice president of the Covenant Church in Congo. He had no idea when he bicycled there that he was going to become a leader in the church. When it was over, the meetings were over, they lasted a week, he got on his bike and biked 150 miles back to the Bible school where he was teaching to tell his wife, because there was no phones there at that time. And they had just been chosen. Their whole life was changing because of that vote. And then later on that week after the conference, he got on his bike again and biked 500 miles to attend his first meeting as the vice president of the church in Congo. During his first term, his wife got sick. And she went to the capital city for medical care, and she died. During his second term as vice president, he met another woman, a widow. She had been at seminary with her husband, and her husband had died, and they met each other and fell in love and got married. And after 8 years as vice president, what do you do after you stop being a leader? He started working with small towns, going out and meeting with people, leading them in Bible studies, but also talking about some of the stuff that was going on in those towns. It was for everyone, not just Covenant people, everyone that was in the town sharing God's word, but then talking about what's going on in this town, what could we do to help make things better? Not big projects, not money from somewhere else. What could we do with what we have? And that's what he did until he died. On the second time I preached at the pastor's conference last year, they asked me to preach about Tychicus, or the name in the Lingala Bible is Tukiko. I maybe had heard the name Tychicus before. I had never studied Tychicus. And there's a whole like five verses where his name are mentioned in the New Testament. He was one of like 80 or 90 people that Paul talks about at the end of the letters, just sort of the list of names, you know, good people, people who would help Paul grow, who had helped Paul in his work, and who Paul had helped grow in their faith as well. Paul talked about him being a loving brother in the faith, and he was known as an honest man. And that's it. That's all we know about Tychicus. Each of us have had people that have helped us grow in our faith. So because of that, I asked the pastors who were at that meeting, I said, who were the people who chose to encourage you in your faith, to help you grow? Who chose you to be a Tychicus when you were younger in your faith? And they, just like you, Ken, they were all thinking about people who had been like that for them. And then I said, who have you chosen to be a Tychicus in your faith? Who have you chosen to help them grow? So my work in Congo is winding down. Serve Globally will choose a new missionary team leader. I've been the team leader for the last 15 years. The ways I do things, the kinds of systems I set up to do my job well, you know, I handed over those computer files to other people, and they might never look at them again. You know, that's how life is. You know, they'll figure out their own ways to do the work that God gives them to do. And I'll need to adjust to not being a missionary pastor. I won't travel and speak to people in churches here. And I'll have new focuses in the home church where we're living now, in near Seattle. My last sermon at the pastor's conference was from this Mark 4 passage that you read this morning. You know, the farmer who throws the seeds, some goes on the path, some in shallow soil, some among thorns, some in good soil. And the church said, okay, that's the passage. We want you to talk about spiritual maturity. And once again, I think, what am I going to say? I talked to Tim Smith. He's a covenant missionary in Congo. He's worked with discipleship a lot. He's worked with camps in Congo for kids camps. Tim and I are unique. We don't always agree on things, you know, but we talk things through. And he's taught me to say something. He's taught me to, when I see him, to say, I love you, Tim. Not something I did before I met Tim. And he gave me some verses, and I'm going to share them with you in just a minute. So I started my sermon at this conference talking about, well, I said I was a member of a church choir in the United States, and everyone laughed when they heard that. I don't know why they laughed, but they did. And then what I wanted to tell them about was our church choir director, Mark Erickson. I told him that Mark's kidneys were failing. He'd had a kidney transplant, actually two of them, when he was a young man. And the second one had lasted 30 years. And now it's starting to fail again. And I talked about kidney transplants and how people donate a kidney, or when someone is in a bad accident or is dying, they might get the kidney. And the people in the congregation were just shaking their heads. Like, if someone had that kind of kidney problem in Congo, that would be death. They would die. And as Mark knew last year that his kidney was failing, he was still directing the choir, and he chose songs that were important to him about his faith. People that talked about God's goodness, God's care, and we started to realize in the choir and in our congregation that Mark was discipling us. He was walking us through that time when his body was starting to fail. From the passage that we read in Mark, we see that Jesus wants the seeds to grow well. He wants us to grow well, but he knows that that doesn't always happen. Jesus wants us to be good in good soil. He wants us to bear much fruit in our lives. Jesus wants us to hear him and believe him and follow him. And Jesus wants other people who have not heard in ways that they can understand, really understand and grasp. He wants them to understand and to believe. He wants them to hear again. So what Jesus is saying, let the planting continue. Let's keep planting. In this conference, there were about 1,500 people who were there. Like I said, it was pastors and spouses. But there's a lot more people that come to those conferences. I mean, this is a big event in a town when it's happening. And so there's kids that will come and play on the outskirts of the conference. It's outside. It's not in a church building. And kids are just playing. And then other people have brought in maybe candy or sugar cane or water, things like that that they're selling on the periphery, because there's you need to eat something when you've been sitting in a four-hour service. You know, so it's you're doing that. And then in addition to that, during the conference, there are hundreds of people that are coming to help. They're bringing in firewood for cooking the food. There are people who are killing and butchering animals. I mean, during your church service, have you ever heard a pig die here at International Falls? It's a loud event. Whatever's going on, you can hear it happening. There's dishes to be washed. There's cooking to be done. There's serving. Twice this last year, I heard someone speak, and they talked about a little sign that was above a kitchen sink in a monastery. And so I don't know if this is a true story or not, but what they said was, this sign said, "Everyone wants to save the world. No one wants to do the dishes." Okay? And the lesson that I taught that day and that I saw around me in those meetings is that discipleship is sometimes the standing up and preaching, or leading and singing, or doing Bible studies together, or giving someone a book. But lots of times, discipleship is just the ordinary stuff that we do in life, in our imperfect lives. But as we are with people and living with people and sharing with people and loving them, that's what we do as God's people. That's what it means to plant good seeds in good places. But here are the verses that Tim gave to me. And I read three versions of the Lingala Bible and got this ready for the pastor's conference. So I'm going to read you the English version of those three versions. I'm going to translate them back. It's from 2 Peter 1, 5 to 8. To our faith in Jesus Christ, let us add the following things. Let us add wisdom and stick to it courage to do good for and with other people. And to that, let us add denying ourselves and in all that we say and do. And to that, let us add endurance and persistence all the way to the end. And to that persistence, let us add holding on to God, worshiping God, seeing God first, giving ourselves to God. And to that, let us add kindness to our sisters and brothers, good hearts, helping one another. And to all of that, let us add love, because love holds it together. Let us love one another. In Congo, when I'm preaching, I often end with a song, not because I'm a good singer, but because if I start singing, everyone else knows the songs, and they'll start singing with me. And this is one song that has come to mean a lot to me in Congo, and it goes this way. Zambia poni yo kosale laye, Nanzo tope namote manayo mobimba, Zambia ponio. The song that came out of the Catholic Church, but now all Christians around Congo sing that. And what it means is this: God chose you to serve him with your whole body and your whole heart. God chose you. He did. He chose you. And all God's people said, amen.